Hello, and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls, the first in quite a long time, and I appreciate your patience. This is a commentary episode, and what that means is I, Kirk, and the other voice that you'll hear through a phone, Kyle, will be talking about Season 6, Episode 19, Judas Priest of NYPD Blue, while watching Season 6, Episode 19, Judas Priest of NYPD Blue. So, if you have the DVDs, if you have a Hulu account, you can watch it with us. We are talking about the episode while watching the episode. But that also means if I have to cut something out due to content or sound quality or what have you, and sound quality, that's hilarious, the podcast has never sounded top tier. But if I have to cut anything out, I have to put in like a fake advertisement, but don't worry, they're not real advertisements. I have never been smart enough to monetize this in any way, shape, or form. Just want to make something that hopefully you dig. Thank you for watching NYPD Blue, and thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. Let's start the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is episode 19 of season 6, Judas Priest.
Oh, we're on Judas Priest?
We're on Judas Priest. It has nothing to do with the band.
I'm just kidding. I'm watching this dum-dum give a
okay.
Talk.
Okay, dum-dum, also recovering alcoholic. I mean, you know. I wanted to talk about this. So this guy,
she's not a dum dum because of alcoholism, Kirk.
This guy who plays Hubert, like the guy who runs these meetings.
Yes.
He was in NYPD Blue as Walter Hoyt. They like didn't even give him different glasses or change his like outfit.
No, not at all.
Like
they do this a lot though.
But, like, I feel like they at least try to change the way the person looks if it's a different character.
I agree with you on that. I think there was an episode, there was a a character a while back that we didn't mention the same thing for. And I think at one point they played a transvestite prostitute and then came back as just a regular dude.
And
so, like, there was at least a try to.
And
this guy's just not as hippie.
And even to highlight my point, this dude that's talking to Sipowitz right now, I'm pretty sure he was on the show before and wasn't wearing glasses and was wearing a different outfit.
And is this dude trying to hit at Katie?
Is he trying to get some Katie in his life, is what you're asking?
That's what I'm asking, like because he's like real, real questioning about her. Which is fine. Like him, Sipowitz and her don't have that relationship anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool.
Don't you think it would have been better if this guy was Walter?
Maybe. I mean,
maybe, like, it could have just been, like, a thing, you know? Maybe, like, him and Andy, like, Walter and Andy ended up getting along, so maybe Andy's, like, semi-comfortable to be at day meetings with him. I don't know. Anyways,
maybe.
There's important things going on.
Well, and also, he respected Walter a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Because Walter stood up to the mob, and he was kind of, like, a little bit naive about it. But, anyway, the point you were trying to make, Dornan walked in on this meeting, and he's clearly fucked up.
Yeah, and he's belligerent, and he's screaming, he's yelling, scaring the townsfolk.
What, like he's Frankenstein's monster?
Doesn't Katie say something like, "Oh, don't you, how do you know that man?"
And yeah, and then Sipowitz kind of berates her for asking questions.
I mean, hey, Katie, no offense. Like, where do you think I know him from?
He just said he's not a cop anymore. I think it'd be from being a cop.
And also, like, Andy just eats, breathes, sleeps, like being an NYPD officer. So, like, where do you think he knows it from? Like, he's not in, like, no fucking rec league of anything.
Yeah, he's not bowling on the weekends.
And supposedly he's not drinking anymore, so he's not meeting guys at bars. So it's like, where do you think he met this dude?
Also, quick, the credits are about to end for the opening of NYPD Blue. Quick, famous faces, Dornan, Richard Gant of Deadwood, Big Lebowski, Norbit. Deborah Monk.
Probably his best movie.
I'll be honest, Norbit is the only movie in recent memory I stopped after 5 minutes. I couldn't do
really?
it.
it was so racist and fucked up and weird. I was like, I can't do this. Like, I can't watch this movie.
Real quick. Because if I remember correctly, Norbert, made by Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
Was it racist towards white people?
Asians. It opens up with one of the most racist things I've seen about Asian folks I've ever seen. But I'll talk about it. We'll talk about it off. Right now, Cohen's got to come in. Cohen's got to come in and be pissy.
He's got to stick up his ass.
Because the tape, the episode we talked about last time, when they put a sting on Cullen, and I said they probably shouldn't say anything while they're arresting him. All of that's coming to bite him in the ass now. Sipowitz makes fun of his lawyer.
I get it, but at the same time, I don't think it's anything that is that bad. You know what I mean? I don't think he said anything that was they said anything on tape that was bad. Personally, I think it's just the way I took it is the way I took it this scene is this thing kind of happened. It doesn't help the case. It doesn't hurt it a lot, but it's just something for Cullen to be a bitch about.
And it's something for James Sinclair to take apart.
Yeah, if he needed to. Yeah, 100%. So that's what he's worried about. It's not anything that can, really help or hurt the case. It's just something that can muddy the case. And it just, in my opinion, it just gives Cullen a chance to, just kind of be a dick because Kirkendall told him he can go fuck himself.
It's also interesting because basically this is showing that Leo is using his intelligence and his words to be a frustrated bitch about what's going on and say what they need to do is connect the drugs to Cullinan so that it's clearly he was trying to murder the woman in the room. And then
he says that line, you castrate an adult, he tends to sound like a child.
And she said, no one castrated you, asshole. Which is, a good point. No one did anything to him.
Yeah. She literally, Kirk, we talked about this last time. He literally got mad at her for doing her job.
Doing her job and trying her best.
And, taking a crazy, guy off the street, and he's mad about that. It's kind of funny.
I also love how he's like, thanks for the high level of discourse. He was talking at them, being an asshole. and they were just responding to him being an asshole. And he's like, thanks for the discourse.
He came in with the attitude.
He's like, you're the one being an ass. We're all just trying to understand what you're talking about right now.
Motherfucker came in for a fight, kind of got one, and then was just a bitch and left.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a real bitch. Leo's a real bitch in this episode. Here, Sipowitz reaches out to Fancy to talk to Dornan.
So in all the times I've watched this, I've never noticed, or maybe I just haven't paid that close attention, that Fancy was thinking of trying to get Cullen off the case.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that'd be a good decision if you're a boss.
Oh, 100%.
It's almost like for half a moment, Fancy's like, huh, maybe I shouldn't let everybody fuck each other. Maybe that's not a good idea.
Maybe there's a reason for not having everyone in the squad take each other to bed. Maybe that's a reason why they bring that up. But anyways, Sipowitz asks Fancy to talk to Dornan. Fancy feels some kind of way, right? I think Fancy's kind of like, why are you? Why is it because I'm a black man?
Well,
and Sipowitz kind of says, yeah.
Well, it's an odd thing. Because I think Sipowitz is kind of realizing, A, Dornan has a problem with white cops. And he remembers when they went on the sting where Fancy got shot. He remembers that Dornan and him had a pretty easy conversation about growing up, about becoming cops, about getting educated. And it was it would be better for you to reach out as peers than for me to do it. Because I'm the one that may have gotten him in this situation. So it's not a completely race thing, but because it's Sipowitz and he has this history, it causes this problem. You know what I mean?
I agree. I get that. But I think that's also rooted in a little bit with, like, you understand him better. You, based off of that conversation, and you get along with him better, so I think you would get along better talking to him.
Yeah.
He go. Sipowicz also makes his rounds to what's her name?
Kirkendall. Yeah.
And tells her that she does not to worry on this whole Cohen thing. He deserves better. And then he basically fucking guilts everyone else but himself to, like, take her kids out.
Yeah, someone should take care of her kids. I'm not gonna.
He comes to the thing and goes, I think I know why she's upset. It's because her and her boys got along. Someone should really do something. And then, like, makes Danny volunteer.
Here we got Mr. Mayo, who I don't know what he was in, but his, like, IMDb photo is him, like, in a slasher movie.
Okay.
And it really weirds me out every time I see it, because I'm like, oh, geez, what were you in, buddy?
I mean, there's an easy way to answer that question.
But like, it's weird, because really when you look wondering. At his, when you look at his known for, it's not a none of them are horror movies, unless you count Mississippi Burning, but that's a different kind of horror.
No, I don't think he's a Mississippi Burning has any slasher shit in it. But anyways, John
fucked up
because he gives information to the father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all kind of coming out because he comes to the station looking for answers and shit.
And it's a moment in bad judgment. Extremely bad judgment for John.
Yeah.
Extremely bad judgment. And now,
I get it because yeah. John and him were friends. John and his daughter were friends. So, like, in a way, he's bonding over his lost friend with someone that, like, knew her. He gets to reminisce. There's a lot there. Like, I get a little bit, like, why he kind of would have those conversations with him. But, yeah, he kind of fucked up.
And now he goes to the principal's office, a.k.a. Fancy's office. And Fancy, like, gets a little hard-ass with him. But then clearly, like, pulls off because he's like, but everybody likes you. We're not going to get rid of you.
Oh, yeah, because, well, John's about to, like, lose it. He's very sad. He's, like, about to cry. And I think also, you know, they kind of, like, do you think they tried to show, like, oh, he's also, because he's a little more flamboyant, Fancy doesn't go as hard on him as he would, like, Sipowicz?
Well, I think it's because,
and he probably also knows, like John would never do anything, like, purposefully either.
I think it's a combination of Fancy went in there just to give him, like, a talking to, and I think he recognizes John thinks he's about to get fired.
Oh, I can see that.
Like, I think when John sits down, he's like, oh, shit, I'm about to lose this job. I love this job. I love working with these people. And then Fancy is like, I'm going to yell at this guy, I'm going to yell at this guy. And then he sees him and goes, I'm not going to fire you, dude. Like, people really like you around here.
No, I could see that. Especially, like, because John is, you know, like, I think John also registers how upset and what he did was so wrong. I think you're right. He thinks he's definitely gone.
Right here, there's a little bit of exposition that's, like, snuck in where Sipowicz is like, we found a prostitute that would run with Roberts' old girlfriend. And if you miss it, then you don't realize, like, oh, that's the woman that they pick up or go to pick up. It's related to Roberts and the drugs and all that.
So do we think Fancy pulls them into the coffee room to keep them out of John's ear?
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
I think he pulls him into the room to keep it out of John's, because John, he doesn't need John to know, like, okay, did you just cause a problem for all of us? Like, did you just cause something that we all have to consider as a part of our job now every day, is worrying about this guy? Yeah. The thing that's awkward is Sipowicz pulls a, like, hey, you gonna call him? Like, in the middle of the conversation that has nothing to do with that. Like, hey, you gonna call Dornan?
Like, yeah, that moment when he puts the phone to his ear, just kind of looks at him with the four other cops around, three other cops around, have no idea what's going on. But, like, I feel like that's Sipowicz, though. Like, when something is on Sipowicz's mind, it doesn't matter. Like, you're gonna, like, he's gonna bring it up no matter what and get it taken care of.
What's his name?
Sipowicz.
Not Sipowicz. John apologizes. Now he just repeatedly apologizes to everybody throughout the rest of the day for what
he did. I just love when Sipowicz walks out, he walks back in and just gives him, like, the zip flip and throw away the key thing. Like, that's all Sipowicz is going to tell him. We're not going to talk about this anymore. Just keep your mouth shut.
This shit is great. This scene, I caught it immediately, and it made me laugh. How they walk up to these two women, they're like, give her purse to you. Give her your purse so we don't have to look at it. And then...
Yeah, because if they bring her in the station house, you know, to talk to her, they're going to have to, like, look through her stuff.
But it's great. It's like, this is how much we don't want to jam you up or actually arrest you. Give away all the evidence. Everything you mention has nothing to do with drugs or money for prostitution. And bye.
No, I think it's awesome. As she's getting put in the car, she goes, to her friend, I know how much is in there. Like, she basically, she knows how much money and drugs are in there, like, and they're just like, let's go, we just need to talk real quick.
And here, this scene is really great to me, except for one big thing. Well, two big things.
What?
They're both dressed like fucking fishermen. Why? Like, if these two didn't show up, I feel like this scene would be perfect. Because it's fancy.
You're not feeling Greg and Martinez out for a fish?
No, I'm not digging it. Because this is a very serious conversation, and they both are like, hey, we did some fishing! Oh, we caught some stuff! And it's like, yeah, having a conversation here, guys. He's like, yeah, we go through the kitchen because we stink! And you're like, guys, get the fuck out of here, please.
But they don't know that. You gotta give them some credit. They don't know what's going on.
The scene is so dark and, like, deep because it's Fancy, who has his own issues with drinking because of his father, clapping back at Dornan, who's, like, basically, he's on the downhill slope. Like, he is going down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's well. I mean, he's lost his job. I think he's there.
Well, he's on like forced leave.
Mm-hmm.
He mentions he's on forced leave, and then I think Fancy responds with like, "Oh, and it looks like you're doing a great job to get off of it." Which is nice to know that, like, you know, not to go too hard on cops, like a lot of people who review our show sometimes say, but it's nice to know that people who carry guns and walk the streets with qualified immunity may also have crippling alcohol problems, and instead of firing them, we go, let's just take you out the street a couple days. Let's get you dried out.
But like, it's a bigger deal if I operate like a high-low under the influence of alcohol. These guys are walking around with guns. and if you listen to what Andy says, guys just have, you know, bottles in their desk drawer. So
I also wanted to highlight this woman, Tammy, is played by Shanna Lumeister Stern, I think is her full name, if I'm reading it correctly. And I just thought she did a good job.
She does a good job being a prostitute friend of Mike Roberts, for sure.
who plays it real close to the chest and coy because she knows that it's dangerous people that they're dealing with in the death of Mike Roberts, but then straight up says, like, I'll give you the info, I can get drugs somewhere else.
Which is interesting, because if it's such good stuff, are you sure you want to give it up?
You mean the information or the drugs?
But she's making money though. She is. She's making $200. I mean, there's probably tons of places you can buy drugs from, you know.
Especially in New York.
Especially during that time, yeah. But she's not going to make $200 that easy.
Well, I don't know what. What are her rates for prostitution? I mean, what's the inflation rate? What are we talking here?
Well, I'm not worried about that. I'm just thinking more on her sake. Like, she's looking at $200 and she's like, I don't have to put any type of gross penis around me.
I don't have to put any gross penis anywhere near me, not nowhere in proximity.
No, she doesn't have to touch it. She doesn't have to do nothing.
But yeah.
The way she plays this, she looks a little high.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was 100% intentional. That's why I kind of gave her a shout-out, because I thought she did a good job.
Can you trust a high junkie informant? I mean, we learned from... past that it doesn't work out too well.
They get the information on, like, a guy moving drugs, but, well, because even here, you said she's playing it high. Sipowicz tells him, like, if you go back in there and her head isn't on the pad sleeping, then you've already won. I think they all agree she's a little high.
So here we go, they're talking about Dornan.
And it's weird because I think on the surface, because I already mentioned that I think Sipowicz did this slightly because they're both black, but also because they've had a history together.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Fancy is responding poorly, not because he felt like he was only doing it because he's black, because he doesn't want to revisit the feelings he had for his dad and what his father was doing on the drink.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Especially the way he describes it later, and like, yeah, this scene, I really like this scene.
And then here's Sipowicz kind of, like, explaining to him, like, hey, I understood, like, a cornerstone of my my bigotry and ignorance. I realized it was wrong. And then, what's his name, Fancy kind of lashes out, like, oh, you couldn't do a favor to a black guy? Is that what you're realizing? And he's like, look, man, I'm trying to do something right for this guy, because I know what he's going through.
Yeah, he has just that line. He goes, I'm wrong about a lot, but drinking ain't one of them. And then this scene right here where he talks about, like, slipping and, like, falling off of and regressing and all that. And the Fancy's just, like, watching him and getting sadder and sadder. It's fucking good, man.
It's crazy because, especially with how this episode ends, because if you remember, I think Fancy talked about his father being a drinker before, but I don't know if you knew until this episode how bad of a drinker his father was. So as he reveals more and more, Sipowicz is the recovering alcoholic, but Fancy is the recovering son of an alcoholic. So, like, they're like an interesting team that didn't want to come together but then have to, and they also have, you know, racial issues. So it's like such a weird friction between both of them, but it's just so well made, such good scenes.
And I think during that whole thing, you see that, I think during that whole conversation too, you also see where Fancy realizes that, like, Sipowicz does want to help him. Like, it's really all about, like, trying to help the guy. Like, yeah, Sipowicz, there is a little bit of, like, self, like, wanting to do it selfishly because he feels like he got Dornan fired, but he does generally want to help the guy from drinking.
Oh my god, I forgot about this move. This is where Leo proves he is the bitchiest of bitches.
Oh, this is like the most high school shit ever. Like, he might as well have just, like, gave Russell a piece of paper to give to Kirkendall and says, "Do you like me? Circle one."
Because he makes her come down.
Yes, no, maybe. Like, for fuck's sake, dude.
He makes her come down to the lobby to be like, "What am I doing wrong?" And it's like, you're acting like a dickhead, bro. It's not hard to figure out. By the way, we're adults. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, like you hung out with her kids, like, what? Like, you need to be a grown-up about this shit, dude.
And then he's like, look, I find it really hot that she does all these things that make me angry in a child.
Yeah, that's really weird.
And then she's like, hey, do you want to, like, be a human being for 5 minutes with her? And, like, I love the way it ends the scene where she's like, is it hard thinking of the smartest possible thing you could possibly say? And he's like, you have no idea? And it's like, what an asshole. To then, like, agree, yeah, to be like, yeah, I do think of the smartest thing to say. It is hard.
Yeah. I am smart.
Now that you
You're
say
right.
it, I am.
Oh, it is so hard being me.
I am a sanctimonious prick. You're right.
Now we take a break in the podcast to send a heartfelt congratulations to Ben of Binging with Ben on his new addition to his family. Congratulations to you and your wife Megan and your new little one. I hope to get you on the podcast again, but I don't know, you have a kid now.
Kirkendall is forcing herself into a baseball game with Danny and her kids.
Well, I mean, like, Kirk, hold on. No offense, she's not forcing herself into it. She's just not gonna let her kids go to a baseball game with this, like, yeah, she knows this guy, but, like, she doesn't know this guy.
Well, the point I'm making is we learn in a couple scenes later, she mentions that to Russell, and the implication is so that she can fuck him.
No, I think, okay, well, when we get to that scene, we'll talk about it. I think, oh, I love this character actor.
Dude, I was going to mention, I don't remember a thing he's in, but he's in everything. Don McManus.
He's in a lot of shit. He's really good as this character right here. I think he's great. I think he's fucking fantastic.
He plays like a Wall Street courier who travels with federal amounts of drugs.
And he's really upset because he doesn't know how it got in his bag.
And of course he starts off by blaming an immigrant guy, saying that he blames a guy who could never afford. I think he's Nigerian. He's like, yeah, this guy put like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of drugs in my bag for revenge.
Yeah, because that's what immigrants are doing, trying to do.
I also love the fact that he said his name, which is like, I'm not going to try it because I just lost it in the in the capture.
I think it was Obed Nuntundi.
And Sipowicz goes, "Is that Swiss?" I was like, "What?"
Sometimes Sipowicz has got some like spot on fucking jokes, dude. Sometimes that man is spot on with the sarcasm.
Oh, And what's interesting is this guy, I think his character's name's Kenny Priest. The only reason this episode is called Judas Priest, because he gives up Cullinan.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty dumb.
Dude,
once
I just had a moment.
Sorry to blow your brain there, buddy, but
oh, dude, gone.
But what's also stupid is, or interesting is, Kenny figures out about halfway through this interview what the deal is, and he's like, "Oh, I just have to give up the names."
I love when this whole Sorensen calling him a guppy thing, like, oh.
Embrace your guppiness.
Like, I don't know, I don't know. I don't like it.
You don't
like. But I just don't like the delivery. I don't like how many times they use the word guppy. I just don't like it.
He's no Simone.
But I don't feel like Simone would ever talk like that.
No, exactly.
Like, not even fucking Caruso would say some stupid shit like that.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I don't even think Caruso would do that.
Like, it's just weird, like, that guppy shit. I don't know. Because it doesn't even come off as being, like, tough.
Oh, absolutely not.
Like, I can't think of things, but, like, you know, there are sometimes, like, Caruso and Simone, I don't even remember Caruso's fucking character name, but
John Kelly,
yeah, Kelly, but those guys, like, I just remember, like, they would, like, even when they talked about what, like, soft shit, or whatever that means, but, like, they would still come off somewhat intimidating. He's like, you're a guppy. Embrace your guppiness.
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyways, that's my rant on Sorensen.
He tries to seem like, we have all the cards. We're in control, but it's like, use better words.
Yeah, and like, act better. Like, come off intimidating. But then, like, you know, foreshadowing, we later on, he tries to act tough in some other episodes, and he just can't do it.
It's because he's two Silver Spoons, bro. We see him as that boy who I don't know anything about, because I've never watched Silver Spoons.
Yeah, I've never seen Silver Spoons either.
Here, Sipowicz gets upset with Katie because Katie thought he was having a crisis of drink when...
He's really looking out for somebody. But, I mean, I don't know anyone who's in AA. I don't know much about AA, but, like, isn't she kind of being, like, a good, like, sponsor / like alcoholic, like, fighter friend? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially because she knows that, like, if she would have done the same thing for, like, fucking, anyone in that meeting, and if it wasn't Andy, she would have been doing, like, the right thing, because she's looking out, because his call does seem frantic.
Yeah,
if it's an alcoholic who's drank again and there's a shame, they may say things coded like that, like, oh, it's a friend of mine, they need somebody, blah, 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 you know?
It's also, like, I mean, once again, we are not former alcoholics in AA or anything, but it does also seem like she's so into the program. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh yeah, yeah. She's like a kid who just, like, a high schooler who just finds Jesus.
Like, she is all about the program. So,
oh yeah,
she.
It's like, hey, you going to church on Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday? Like, she's like into it.
What? Sorry, a little yawn there.
Oh, sorry, I hope I'm not boring you.
I did not get a lot of sleep yesterday. but what?
Sorensen walks in on Fancy crying.
And this is where Fancy kind of just reveals, like, Dornan is reminding him so much of his dad that it's making it hard for him to even exist. having kind of a little bit of a anxiety attack, maybe. Maybe a little bit of a...
No, I think he just sees... I don't know if it's an anxiety attack, but more of like... It's probably taking him back to a time where...
Trauma.
He felt helpless and he couldn't do anything to help his father. And so when he sees Dornan, it brings up all of those memories. I mean, that's rough, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. But also, like, this reminds me, I saw something recently. There was a clip of Michael Caine, and he said, you know, men in society are told to fight their tears. So if you portray someone on screen who, he's like, if you portray a man who is trying his hardest to fight the tears, then the audience just starts crying. And it reminded me of this scene, because it's just like, Fancy cannot keep it together. So he's like, I gotta hide in the tombs right now. And Danny just happens to walk in on it. And Ben's like, by the way, I won't tell anybody.
Yeah. I mean, Danny's looking for him because they need to talk to him. But,
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the scene. Here's the scene that we're talking about.
Sorensen invited me and the boys.
He said he has a friend who gets tickets. I went ahead and asked if I could come too.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gives like, the, oh yeah, you trying to fuck that? And then she says, I heard those words come from my very mouth.
And then Russell's like, what came from his? And he said, sure. And they're both, and Russell's like, so you going to hit it? What? There still might be laws against that in several states, implying that he's too young. And then Russell gives her the okay, which we know Russell's also interested in Danny. So this is kind of that weird woman behavior where she doesn't want her to, but she'll be supportive.
So, no. I took that as, I took her when she says the statement, yeah, those words, I heard those words come directly out of my mouth. And then they say like, oh, I don't know, there's still laws against that in some states. I think that is a, of her kind of saying things like, hey, like, yeah, I know. It came off as me, like, it came off as that, but, like, I think I'm realizing, like, no, this can't happen. Like, I'm just going to go as a friend. And then they make, like, a fun comment, like, yeah, isn't that gross? Like, he's so young, blah, blah, blah. And then she even makes a comment, like, well, the magazines say it's okay, ha, ha, ha. Like, I think it's just, like, shit-talking. But I don't think she has a thing for Sorensen.
All right. Sure.
That's my opinion on it. And then Sorensen goes to fucking Sipwitz for advice.
It's also pretty great how, like, the scene's even blocked. Like, they're going to go to their corners, and then they're going to come into the center and talk.
Yeah.
And then... Leo is like, look, I apologize. Can you understand that I'm an asshole? And she's like, yeah, I get it. You're a dick.
But she forgives him, like,
she
pretty
gets,
quickly, dude.
It's because she knows that her pussy's got the power. She's like, I know why you reacted that, dude. You were worried about losing all this, but guess what you did? You're done. Your shit's gonna be outside the apartment. You're gone.
Well, no, they don't share an apartment.
I know, I'm just fucking around.
No, I know. But yeah. Oh yeah, she's like, it's done.
The truth is she has to think about her kids.
No, I agree, but like... What's changed kid-wise... You know, like, it's what he said to you that made you upset. So, like, that doesn't really affect the kids, you know?
What I think it means is if we cut it off now, then the kids don't get even more attached.
Gotcha.
Like,
I get you.
Because right now they're already attached, but I don't think this is going to work out if you're going to keep doing shit like this. So, let's not keep going.
No, that makes sense. I get you.
And then Kirkendall lets him know.
I always found that confusing because she was like, my kids. It's like, yeah, like, I thought the whole point was because he was, called you like a whore when you were just doing your job.
Well, yeah, she's just saying, yeah, let's cut it off before it's too, they're too dug in deep. That's right. So basically they wrap up all this shit with Kenny Priest, saying like he's gonna stay with Sorensen so he doesn't have to worry about retaliation from Cullinan. And then Sibwitz is about to leave for the day.
No, he's gonna do something.
Yeah, he was gonna go talk to Dornan.
Oh, yeah.
But he gets stopped by Fancy, and then they have this weird awkward off until they both decide to go talk to, try to call Dornan in the office.
Yeah, I think Fancy realizes, he can help.
I think it's kind of a combination of, like, I'm not a kid anymore, and this guy isn't my father. If I reach out to help him, it's not his son telling him, like, hey, you need to get your shit together. It's a call, well, I guess subordinate, thanks to being demoted. Because he used to be a desk sergeant, right?
He's not calling in the capacity of, like, as a police officer, I don't think. I think he's trying to call him as, like, a friend and be, like, but I get what you're saying, like, subordinate and whatnot. But, I don't know. I think it's also funny, like, they both kind of, like, are, like, I mean, I can try talking to him. And he's like, yeah, I guess I could try talking to him again. And it's like they both kind of realize, like, hey, we could do this together. It doesn't have to necessarily be, like, you by yourself or me by myself. Like, we both want to help this guy. Let's both call him together, you know?
With our powers combined.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting scene.
Because it's them, like, putting away all the bullshit to be like, look, we both want to help this guy.
Yeah.
In the end,
they both want to have this guy to be like, well, they want, like Andy never wanted him to fall where he has fallen, especially if it's over, you know, him helping Andy clear, like, a bad rap for his wife and shit. He feels even worse. And that, because from the get-go, he told his wife he didn't want to get involved. Because he didn't want to, like, disrespect another cop. Or, like, you know, it's kind of a code thing. Like, you don't go and tell a cop, like, he did a bad job, you know?
He also has history with... He also had history with Sipowicz being really racist to a homeless guy.
In front of him, yeah.
So, like, he... Like, Dornan, like, witnessed, like, okay, maybe Sipowicz isn't a complete bad guy. But then, of course, Dornan gets demoted. We find out it's, like, there's a little bit of other motives from the IAB contact Martens. So it's, like, they have this really big history with Dornan, and then both of them together kind of come together to go, like, look, despite his flaws, despite our flaws, despite our problems with each other, like, the least we can do is put forth a combined effort rather than, like, us trying to contact him separately and not get him and whatnot. But, yeah. And the episode...
And they have just an awkward moment where they sit and stare at each other waiting for his call.
Because, and I cannot remember... I think I did watch the episode after this one. I watched all the way to the end of season 6, but I don't remember if we really get what happens with Dornan.
I don't think so either.
I think they just leave it. Which could be dark.
I think this is it.
It could be some, like, he was found in an alley somewhere and they didn't get to him in time, but we don't know.
This is it, I think, if I remember correctly. I don't think they talk about it anymore. Which is kind of weird, like, I mean, like, then Dornan was really only used as, like, something to help, like, the story of Sipowicz and Fancy.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else about this episode before we wrap it up? I'm trying to look at my notes to see if there's anything I wrote that I needed to mention.
No, it's just we're getting ready, the you know, going into the next episode. The trial's about to start. We're going to start to get into that.
Yeah, we're in the last couple episodes of the season. It's going to turn into one final story to close out all the stuff and leave you on a big cliffhanger. We won't tell you exactly what it is because Kyle did spoil it one episode ago, and I had to cut out a whole bunch.
I did?
You did. I cut it. Don't worry. I'll mention it.
Did I do it knowingly, or did I do it like it was like a Freudian slip?
No, you did it knowingly because we disagreed about something, and then you were like, to prove your point, you're like, by the way, spoiler alert, here's my point being proven. And I was like, okay, well, I have to cut out your point being proven.
Then of course you cut it out because then I would have won.
Anyway, thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. I don't have anything. I got nothing else, so.
No, I don't got anything either. We're getting ready for the trial of the century. And
more James Sinclair in the courtroom, which is fun.
Yeah, like we've talked about it before. I don't like how they don't. I mean, whatever. I don't know what they had going on, but I wish they would have used him as a character more. But then, you know, you brought it up, like, if they use him too much, then, you know, he kind of loses his appeal. So.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see what happens. All right. Later, everybody.
Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. I'm so happy that we got the episodes back on track for the time being. So they should be coming out every other Tuesday, at least till the end of Season 6, which I know is not that long, but it's something. If you need more NYPD Blue content in your life, you can check out a couple of books. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles written about the show. You could check out True Blue, about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. And then you can check out Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. I believe it's 99 cents on Amazon. If you have a moment, please rate and review this show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it, because it helps people see the show and the algorithm and all that and stupid nonsense. But most importantly, it might get people to watch NYPD Blue, which, reminder, is on Hulu. It's also on the DVDs if you can find them in your country. Also, if you don't already, please follow us on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast, on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. That is where we let you know new episodes have come out. Have a good one. Peace.